my teacher's the core of his teachings, really, in something I don't remember whether I've talked to the London group about it before. He called it the four philosophies. Oh, he I didn't like the word philosophy, so it became known as the four views. In Japanese, shitairon. Shi means four, and tairon is usually translated as philosophy, but actually it's not an accurate translation. It's tairon is something much more pragmatic or practical than a philosophy. So something more like a worldview. So I persuaded him to talk about them as the four views. And some of you heard about the four views before, I know. Through studying the Shobo Genzo, he noticed over the years, because he studied it for more than 70 years, and I mean really studied it, he noticed something which I think we can notice in reading the chapters week by week. There are different, Dogen adopts different views in different parts of the chapter. So, for instance, he almost always starts off the chapter with a kind of theoretical explanation of what he wants to talk about. He kind of lays it out as a theory or as a belief. And then, not always in this order, but he will switch his view, and suddenly a paragraph will be a story or a series of stories of conversations, the koan stories between a master and a disciple. And then he'll discuss those one or more stories for a bit. And then you get these strange paragraphs which cause us so much difficulty in understanding, where he plays with language to try and capture the nature of the present moment. Often difficult to understand, and often very very cleverly done play on the characters in Japanese and Chinese. And then very often in a chapter you'll get a rather poetic or a poem sometimes that kind of summarizes what the chapter's about. Not in a logical format or a concrete format, but more in a poetic or inclusive format. And in all the chapters in the Shobo Genzo, you can find these four different approaches. So my teacher, Nishijima Roshi, called them the four views. Well, he called them the four tairon. And Dogen doesn't talk about, you know, I'm going to talk about this subject in four ways. He doesn't ever use the phrase the four views, but that's the way he writes, right the way through all of the chapters in the Shobo Genzo. And this struck my teacher as very important. And it became his kind of, one of his main teaching tools. So we had to look at the Shobogenzo in the four ways. And you can even divide, you can divide a chapter into which view he's taking, which viewpoint. And you can even do it with paragraphs and even with sentences. It becomes very analytical, really, which I don't like. But you can't deny that it's there. You'll get a paragraph where you can see, okay, he's talking from this viewpoint. Oh, now he's switched to this viewpoint. And it's quite helpful in a general way to give some structure to Shobogenzo. And then my teacher, this is, applied this tool, which he developed from studying Dogen, to the world in general, shall I say. He said that human beings look at everything from four views. The first view is a subjective view. So it's based on ideas. It's often analytical. It's abstract. And he said all normal religions are in this view of the world. The view is based on belief in some idea or some fact, and that belief is shared. So a large part of our, according to Nishijima Roshi's structure of the four views, large part of our lives are from the first view, because many of the things that we take as real are in fact abstract. A bank account, money, these are all abstract, shared beliefs. And if somebody doesn't share the belief that a piece of paper is worth £5, then you can't use that piece of paper as money, because the other party doesn't share the belief, the abstract belief that you have. So huge parts of our modern lives are subjective, in that what we share and believe in is abstract. That may not make it any less real or important, but we can say that it's abstract or virtual. So all philosophies and all religions are looking at reality from this first viewpoint. And then from the second viewpoint, the world is concrete. It's full of objects, and human beings have developed a whole field of the study of objects known as science. So the world of object and its investigation of science look at the world from the second viewpoint. So this second viewpoint comes from Dogen's use of concrete stories to discuss a particular statement. So the second viewpoint is the concrete physical world and all that is therein. And then his third viewpoint, which represents Dogen's attempt to describe reality in the present moment, is represented by our synthesis of our subjective view of the world and our objective view of the world. So, for instance, we may have an idea of something that we want to do, say build a house. That's a subjective view of it. And then in the concrete view of it, we need to find the physical materials, the objects with which we're going to build our house. And in the third view, we have to do something. So we actually have to act. And when we act, we synthesize our original plan or idea with the physical objects we're going to manipulate. And then in the fourth viewpoint, it's an overall viewpoint of how the world really is. So although we have an abstract plan in our heads to do something with physical objects, and we then have to do something to act, we can take an overview of that whole situation and see the nature of the reality that's taking place. And this was his mapping of Dogen's four views onto the world. Might sound quite strange. But we can see in different areas of our lives how we look at things from these four different points of view. So it can make a kind of sense or a kind of template for how we view the world from different aspects, sometimes subjectively, sometimes objectively, sometimes through our real action, our real experience, and sometimes as an overall intuitive grasping of reality. So that's Nishijima Roshi's theory of the four views. It's a theory. So the theory itself is in the first view. And whether or not we think of our lives in that respect, it's quite a useful way to look at the Shobogenzo chapters. I was reminded of it this morning because I'm listening to an audiobook by an Israeli professor called Yuval Harari. He wrote, I think, three quite well-known books. The first one, I think, is called Homo Sapiens. He's a historian, and he's written this book, which became a bestseller, which is, you know, the history of humanity. It doesn't take on small subjects. It's history of humanity. It's very good. And his second book is called Homo Deus, which is the future of humanity. And in these two books, which I've been listening to, he uses these four views. He doesn't call them four views, but he talks about how a human society developed abstract beliefs and then shared those beliefs, and the ability to share those beliefs so that I believe in the same thing that you believe in gave power to create physical infrastructure, if you like, to build civilization. And he compares it with animals who don't have the ability to share beliefs. So that's what made me think of Nishijima's four views being recreated by an Israeli professor who knows nothing about Nishijima. But obviously it's a useful tool if you want to look at the history of civilization. You could say, and this is one thing my teacher used to say, civilizations were in the subjective phase until the Middle Ages. Everybody believed that God controlled the world. And because everybody believed it, God did control the world. And the world people lived in was controlled by God. They were sure of it. And anybody who said otherwise was saying something terrible. And then a few people in Italy started looking at things in front of them and noticed that they didn't quite fit in with the idea that God controls everything. And they started looking at the planets and so on. So the beginnings of science, Nishijima said, the civilization moved into the second viewpoint, which is the development of science. And science developed slowly over the hundreds of years up to fairly recently, where we've moved into the third viewpoint, civilization, that is. He talked about things with a lot. He painted pictures with a very large brush. We're now moving into a phase where people realize the value of action. They notice that actually we exist here and now. And you can see lots of teachers on the internet saying the same thing, whether they're Buddhist, Christian, or whatever. Even things like sports psychology are noticing that human beings actually do things in the here and now. And the here and now has its own structure and has its own philosophy and its own psychology. And so my teacher, who was an eternal optimist, thought that the next phase was human civilization will move into the fourth phase, which is realization of reality. So he was very optimistic and thought that we're on our way to realizing the true nature of ourselves and the world, following Dogen's four views. So in that way, he spent his whole life making for himself the way that Dogen explained the world apply to the world that he lived in, the world that we live in. I heard it so much, I think it kind of rubbed off on my brain without me noticing. But it can become a kind of analytical tool too much, really. Dogen himself didn't sit down to write in four phases and say, okay, I've finished the first paragraph, that's my subjective view, now I'm going to switch to an objective view. I'm sure he didn't, but there's some pattern in the way he writes, and that pattern can be seen in the development of human civilization, in our own personal lives, and wherever we look for it, according to my teacher, you can see this pattern. So what do you think?
I think it's very, very interesting. I think Shobhagendra does seem to follow that structure, and actually having that structure makes it a bit less bewildering, personally. What is the... Sorry, I'm not really got my head around the fourth view. What is the fourth view again?
Well, the fourth view isn't really a view. In Dogen's writings, his fourth view is the way that he writes to try and capture what reality is really like. He's not trying to describe the present moment. He's not trying to give us some belief or theory. He's not trying to talk about a story. He's trying to capture something overall, which he might do with a poem. And the poem might say something like, a moment. At the end of Ben, there are some lovely poems at the end of, oh, that's book two. I thought this was book one. The end of one chapter in book two. The body of the Buddhas is golden coloured and adorned with 100 signs of happiness. So to Dogen, that's a kind of summary of what the whole chapter's about, poetically. Or in it is another chapter, it ends with a poem. Life is a manifestation of all functions. Death is a manifestation of all functions. They fill up the whole of space. The naked mind is always moment by moment. It's a poetic summary of the overall situation to Dogen. So if we apply that structure to civilization, then the fourth phase of civilization is when everybody knows what everything is. We know who we are, where we are, what we are, and we live in Buddhist heaven, which means we all practice zazen. So it's not really a view in the sense that it's not a way to look at something. It's a way to integrate everything. So it's an integral, integrating view. I struggled with, I asked him hundreds of times, well, I don't quite understand what your fourth view is. And he'd tell me again. And in fact, when I wrote a letter, I recorded his early talks about it and then wrote a booklet, which is on the internet somewhere, called The Four Views and One Reality, The Three Views and One Reality. Because to me, there were three views I could grasp, but this fourth one didn't seem like a view to me. So I had the same question that you have, Dave.
It seems almost like an acknowledgement that the whole can't be expressed as a view, so it's just a sort of glimpse or allusion to the big picture.
Yeah. So the problem is really with how to what to call them. So three views and one reality. I think there's even that we changed it. You know, we changed the title several times to try and capture what in Japanese is no problem. Japanese are much kinder with their terms. A term doesn't have to mean exactly one thing. It's got blurred edges. It's a very useful language in that way. So Tairon can mean a kind of worldview or a sense of the world or a philosophy or whatever.
The downside of English having the largest vocabulary, isn't it?
Pardon?
English is by far the largest vocabulary of any language. And it's,
is it?
Yeah.
Much than German.
Yeah, I think lots of foreign loan words as part of that, and it being the language of science. But yeah, probably just too many fine distinctions.
Mm-hmm. Japanese is very good for writing poetry. English is very good for writing scientific papers. Mm-hmm.
I get English poems.
You do, yeah.
Hey, Mike, could I just ask the four views and the studying of the Shobogenzo?
Yeah.
Have you consciously become aware of how they relate to your everyday experience of reality?
I have, yes, because I was brainwashed by my teacher over a long period of time. I can never be an academic. I don't have the kind of character that can pursue an idea or a set of ideas. I learn things by rather like process of throwing wet mud at a wall. Some of it sticks and most of it drops off. But if you keep throwing, it slowly builds up. And that's how I learned Dogen, really, going through and through and through. And slowly something stuck, including Nishijima's way of looking at Dogen's writings in four phases or four views. Yeah. That's over many years. But I don't find it helpful to introduce the Shōgo Genzo to people by saying, we can look at it from four perspectives. I think it's too analytical. However, it has its place.
Because when we're discussing the Shōgo Genzo, as we've been doing on and off through sessions,
yes,
it does feel quite often that one is being guided to something very fundamental in experience.
Yes, that's right.
And yet, of course, we're actually using abstract language, e.g. we're using words with each yes. other, but we seem to be very often brought to a point of confrontation with something fundamental.
Yes, it's true. So it's a strange book, relatively impenetrable, but if you go on turning the pages, not trying to penetrate it too much, but just turning the pages, something rubs off. Yes, it's true. As if there's some hidden structure to it that somehow slowly identifies with the hidden structure in your brain.
Well, I think it always, for me, very often comes back to what's under my nose, the moment of the here and now, which...
Yes, that's what it's about.
Which is so extraordinary because it's under our noses all the time.
Yes. That's it. Well, this is it, rather. A book about the here and now.
But in terms of your own experience, do you think this process of going over the book and, you know, conducting sessions and so on has made you more sensitive to the reality of your life here and now? Sorry, bit of a big question, but...
Well, I'm aware of being here and now at this moment more than when I was young. I don't know what the reason is. You know, it's all a hypothesis, isn't it, really? Was it because I studied the Shōgo Genzo and practiced Zazen, or does it happen to everybody? Or? I don't get lost in other areas for very long.
And even if these four views aren't like explicitly used by Dogen as a sort of rhetorical technique, there is that rhythm of not getting stuck, I think, seems very evident in the writing. As soon as he's figured out one way of looking at it, he won't let you get too comfortable with it.
Yes.
Turn the tables and
yes.
Look at things another way.
That's right. And that's a nice way to live. That's a nice way to write. It's a nice way to live too. Don't get stuck in one view. of the world. Like, for instance, next week I'm going on holiday to Mallorca and I booked this fantastic hotel, and don't get stuck in that view. Or we do get stuck in views, like when we fall in love. You get really stuck in a view for a bit, but eventually you come out, you climb out of the hole to reality. So, yes, switching views is something that becomes easier if we become familiar with the situation. I mean, at the back of the last verse in Nagarjuna's Mula Madhyamaka Karika that I translated once, the last verse says,
"Pay homage to Gautama, to he who out of compassion taught the true Dharma and the relinquishing of all views."
As the relinquishing.
Learn to switch views, don't stay in one view, and then learn to relinquish all views. What's relinquishing views mean? You never have an opinion. No, it doesn't mean that. It means being fully in the moment. For instance, when you're sitting in Zazen and your busy mind is quietened down and you're not so aware of your knees hurting, you don't have a view of anything, really. You relinquish it.
Maybe views have a physical effect on us as well.
They do, absolutely, yes.
They must do. The physical brain activity is physical activity, isn't it? Only that's an abstract form.
What do you mean, Matt?
Well, when we say we're gripped by a view or we're gripped by an idea, we're using a physical word. Mm-hmm. And when we're sitting in Zazen, we're kind of maybe letting go of grips on us. I don't know. And we're finding balance. We're probably not so gripped. That's what is coming to me.
Yeah. You once lent me a book about, I've forgotten the exact title, about trance. And it struck me as a very nice way to explain. We live in lots of trances. That is, a view grips us so strongly, like a strong religious view or a strong view about what the government is doing wrong, or, you know, there's hundreds of times in our lives we get gripped by a view. To the extent we're in a kind of, we're locked in this world. So I thought the word trance is rather nice. We live in a trance.
Our physical balance is disturbed by the view.
Yes. Yes. This is what happens to religious terrorists who wind themselves up to believe in a particular belief so strongly that their physical state changes, and that reinforces their belief to such an extent that they can decide to blow themselves up or ride to the Holy Land or all the other things that religious fanatics and terrorists have done over the centuries.
So maybe relinquishing all views doesn't necessarily mean having no views at all or existing in some state where you're hovering above the views, but maybe it means being able to move in and out of different views as well.
Yes, exactly. So it's relinquishing. The act of relinquishing is the important thing. Doesn't mean we mustn't have any views. Doesn't say don't have any views ever. That's stupid. But to be able to move in and out, to be able to relinquish, doesn't mean they're not going to come back. So to be able to drop off. And they'll come back, you don't need to worry about that.
And to relinquish now, rather than to have had relinquished at some point in the future.
Yes. The act of doing it now, yes.
And then again, when?
And then again, yes.
Again.
Every day.
But practice relinquishing. The more the better.
Very hard, actually, isn't it, sometimes?
Yes.
When you're, say, discussing things with someone you don't agree with.
Oh, yes. The ideal opportunity to practice relinquishing.
It's true.
You don't want to relinquish, do you? You want to win.
Well, it's also the whole business of defending your corner, isn't it?
Absolutely. What would happen if somebody got into your corner?
One feels more vulnerable, I think.
It's a very interesting area, isn't it, really?
Very interesting.
How we can feel vulnerable by somebody saying certain words to us.
So it's all mixed in with this stuff of domination, isn't it? Being persuaded to another person's point of view is still part of you thinks that that's submitting to them being dominated by them.
Yeah. It's all a nightmare. It's better just to carry on and try and win everything, I think.
Well, you usually do win, Mike, in the end.
Who does?
You do.
You must be joking.
This theme reminds me of the phrase a flexible mind that I think you've mentioned.
Yes, it's what Dogen said when he came back from China. A monk asked him, what did you get in China? He said, a flexible mind.
He didn't get the right answer.
No. There isn't a right answer.
But with dogmatic religion, there is, isn't there? You know, Jesus is the Son of God. If you don't believe that, you're committing blasphemy.
Yeah.
And if you don't subscribe to it, you're in somehow, and if you don't subscribe to a particular dogma, then somehow you're copping out. You're evading committing yourself.
Yeah, it's based on belief, isn't it?
Get the same thing in politics.
Maybe.
Well, it's the same with lots of cultural views. I mean, you have a religious culture and you're an apostate, then you're shunned. If we don't believe in things like democracy or whatever the current cultural view is, at least in America, you'll be shunned or You're not yeah. part of the cultural whole.
I think Mark's point is you've got to be in the club. You've got to be in a club.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can if you're in the club and you believe it, then you don't have a flexible mind, do you?
But it's amongst people who kind of are stuck in the first view and insist on seeing through some kind of ideology, be it religious, political, whatever. To not be like that is seen as being weak, as being shiftless.
Yeah.
Uncommitted. Yes.
Yeah. Everything's done to make it better, more preferable to be with everybody else. That's the strength of human beings, according to Yuval Harari, is our unique ability to cooperate with each other, to do things in large numbers, even if we don't know the people we're cooperating with. Whereas animals can only cooperate when they know who they're cooperating with. In small groups.
Yeah, I think we tend to have more like have similar beliefs to the people we associate with, which is probably happening in this group right now. So the idea of holding a view lightly is itself an idea, isn't it? That we feeling consensus pressure to,
Is it possible to get stuck in the view of the four views?
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
The view of the four views is only in the first view.
Yeah.
So you know what fractal nesting is like. Patterns inside patterns inside patterns. So. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you look at, I said science is an objective view of the world. But science has a theory, has a practice, has experiments. So there are four views within science. There's the theoretical view of science, and then there's actual practical investigation and experiment and so on. So it's a kind of a nesting pattern.
But is it fair to say that whatever sequence Dogen uses these in, he always ends up in the fourth?
Usually, yes. Sometimes it's not so clear. And it's tempting to try and make it clearer than it actually is in his writings, which is, I don't think, very helpful. But... of course, obviously, if you're writing an essay, you want it, you end the essay with a kind of conclusion. So, quite naturally, he tries to sum up what he's tried to say, and that's often the fourth view. Yes. I think there are some chapters where he doesn't, but I haven't got all the books in front of me.
So am I right in saying that Nishijima relates these ideas to the world political situation? For example, the divide between the West and the communist Soviet Union as it then was, e.g. that we in the West are sort of encapsulated by the ideal, and that communism was captivated by the material, and we opposed each other politically. That Nishijima looks at these elements in...
He looked at everything through his four viewpoints. I think he even looked at us students through these four viewpoints. You know, when you start studying something, you're kind of you want to know about it as an idea, as a system. If you keep studying long enough, you realize what it's all about. You go through four stages. You could say, I think he believed in it. He believed in its value so much, he applied it to everything. Yeah, the danger is you try to apply these four views where they don't fit. In other words, you want to fit reality into your four views. Reality doesn't fit into anything.
When you were talking about applying the four views as a model to like human civilization, I found myself wondering at one point whether one could conceivably describe the fourth stage almost as acceptance of the outcome of the previous three.
Yeah.
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 Because you do get this. I had a personal example going through my head as you were talking about that, and that was of making a sculpture the last time I did that ages ago. And you have the subjective idea of what it's going to look like or what you want it to look like. You then go and get the materials. You then put the idea and the materials together, and you get something which may not resemble your original subjective idea. And then it's whether or not you accept that.
But if you've put idea and bricks and mortar together and built a house, it's difficult not to accept it. Well, I can knock it down, I suppose. Mm. But yeah, you can say it's some kind of acceptance, yes. Acknowledgement, acceptance, realization. Yeah. But yeah, Mark, if you, on the Shobel Genzo Net website, I put, Shijima wrote in his later years, called the Handbook of Authentic Buddhism. And in that, he discusses the conflict, his view of the conflict between the West and the East, you know, the Cold War, in fact. But he doesn't do it so strongly using the four views. Although he thought that communism was a system based on material value, because Marx's theory is gross materialism, if you like. And I suppose you can say that the Western system is more idealistic, but I don't know whether that's true. No, it's not, is it really? Anyway, you can read that.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.